Okay, so I've been proposing during Advent that what we're celebrating is the absence of God.
It sounds sort of scandalous
at first blush, I think, and implausible. But I tried to make this more personal by saying, where is God absent in my life? In my life, where is God missing? And I think there's a rich field of examination. A number of years ago, when I was at Kingsett, I had a happy inspiration, one of the two or three in my lifetime, when I asked myself, Trojak, what makes you suffer? That's one of the best heuristic devices I know. Heuristic means to seek out. To find out who you are. There are very few questions as poignant and pointed and illuminating as that question. And I bring that up because of the word that was I used last Sunday, patience. The Latin root of patience is the verb patior, which means to suffer. Before it means passionate time in bed, or passion for war, or passion for anything else. It means to suffer. Patior is to suffer. And so I'd like to take that up again today and try to develop it a little bit. What makes you suffer? See, the pious answer, well, I'm suffering because Jesus hasn't come back yet. A friend of mine was telling about a fundamentalist relative of theirs who wants to die in the worst way because she wants to be with Jesus. Well, perhaps. It doesn't work that way, folks. I have news for you. It does not work that way. But suffering is of the essence here. And then that just opens up this great, huge range of possibilities. What makes me suffer? See, the ideal pious answer would be like that fundamentally. I'm suffering because I'm not with Jesus yet. Well, I don't want to look too closely at that because I have a feeling it is skin deep. So I step back from that and come up with another possible answer to the question, what makes me suffer? And this is more apt for me and perhaps for you. I suffer because I do not suffer the absence of Jesus. I get along quite nicely, you know. Get up in the morning, more or less. I do my business, let the dogs out, feed them, you know, eat breakfast. And the day goes on, and the day ends with some British mystery TV and the news. And I go to bed, oh God, I forgot all about you all day. It hadn't even adverted to me that you're around someplace. You see, the anatomy of that situation is that I am absent. God's still there, but it's I who am absent. But I don't even notice the absence. There's no pain here. So my prayer, such as it is much more modest. I pray to be able to suffer, that I do not suffer from your absence in my life. That's a tough proposition, I suspect. It is for me, at least, perhaps for you. All kinds of things make me suffer. Disappointment, betrayal of friends, you know, mistrust, dishonesty, cowardice, you know. All those things are normal incidents of suffering, you know, for all of us. But unless we attach that to the reality of Jesus, for instance, an example, the fact that I do not suffer from the fact that there are more refugees living in terrible conditions, that doesn't bother me at all from the beginning of the day to the end. I should suffer because of that. I should suffer because of the lack of suffering, not the absence of Jesus. Because the presence of Jesus means that, as we get all over in the Beatitudes or readings today, what Jesus does is give me meaning to my life. Ultimate meaning, we say. And here's to, I have to pause and say, what is really ultimately meaningful for me? I don't think 90% of the time it's the absence of Jesus in my life. The absence of sensitivity to the almost incalculable misery that's visited on all kinds of people on our planet at this moment. From little bitty things, for instance, Judene, my Haitian son, was at the house the other day, and he said, yeah, he was in the dollar store in Sherwood Forest Mall, and the cop was there. So we went around, looked at stuff, left. The cop followed him to Walmart. And again, chased him around Walmart as Judene was just looking at what was up. Why? Because there was a great big sign on Judene's forehead. I am a thief. No, it was much clearer than that. I am black. I am black. And that happened last week. That did not happen 30, 40, 50 years ago. That happened. That ought to make me suffer. And that's small beer. Small beer compared to the unimaginable misery of so many millions of people on this planet at this moment. This is not, please note, this is not an injunction to be miserable. This is not a counsel of, well, you should feel bad. What are you laughing about? There's nothing to laugh about here. It's all miserable. No. Because if you follow the trajectory of that line of thought, what keeps it from being a recipe for misery? Really? Because it ought to be. I really believe it really ought to be. But it's not. So then I go to this lowercase suffering of suffering because I do not suffer. I do not suffer about the right things. I do not suffer about the absence of justice and honesty and goodness and love and truthfulness in our world. In me. Forget the world momentarily. Just look at me. And that's, I think, where the problem lies. And that's where my suffering ought to begin. But you see, at least that I recognize that absence. The absence of the continuing passion of Jesus played out every day on this planet in the lives of so many, many, many people. That ought to be the mainspring of what makes me suffer, but it is not. It is not. So I pray that I can find out what really should make me suffer and to join myself in hope. Because if you don't have hope, if you don't believe that there's something larger than all this mayhem, misery on this planet at this moment, then the game's over. Then I just do what I typically do. I just curl back into my shell and say, everything wonderful. Everything's wonderful. My dogs are healthy. My CD collection is bursting at the seams. I got more DVDs than I could watch in a lifetime. You know, who needs anything else? I got all that stuff. And that's what I usually protect myself with, I think. I look at the church as an institution. That's why Francis is so amazing. Francis is akin to all the people in the slums of Buenos Aires or Kinshasa or wherever he is. He really is brother to those people. He really is brother to those people. Even if he can go back to his two-room Vatican apartment, he's still living in a hotel, let me add. and have a nice soft bed and clean sheets. I don't think he ever leaves all those beggars, those hungry, those diseased, those forlorn people alone. So if he can do it, and I see that that's what God is calling me to do, should be doable.